ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
After World War II, Australia received a host of refugees from war-torn nations. And these included a surprising number of Polish people who'd endured what is known as the Polish abduction. This was when, as a result of the initial non-aggression pact between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union, prior to the German invasion of the USSR in 1941, millions of Polish soldiers and civilians were forcibly taken into Russia as slave labour. When released, they were released when Russia went to war with the Nazis, they had to basically wander through Soviet Asia as part of a lost army under General Anders, known as the Anders Army, with many eventually moving to Australia, leaving everything from their old lives behind. Paul Morgan's a Melbourne-based writer, the author of two novels, The Pelagius Book and Turner's Paintbox, and he's written a new novel called The Winter Palace, based on these historical events. He joins us for Nightlife History. Paul, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks, Phil. Good to be here.
Look, this is a little-known part of Australia's immigration history. Tell us about the Polish abduction and how it happened. I've tried to summarise it, but I'd love your words.
No, you did a good job. It's such an extraordinary event that's relatively little known, that over a million people were scooped up by the Russians. Postmen, doctors, families, watchmakers, just entire towns put onto trains and sent over the Urals to Siberia. And when they got there, they were told, chop down trees or you'll starve.
But how did this happen? I mean, because the Germans invade Poland.
That's right.
How do the Russians? How do the Russians get these people?
Well, it was one of these devilish pacts between Hitler and Stalin, where they divided Poland between them, one invading from the west, mm-hmm. one from the east. And when the Russians came in, they did what has been a long tradition, unfortunately, with Russians, which is to scoop up people and enslave them. Send them off to Siberia. The Tsars used to do this in the 19th and 18th century, and it looks like it's happening in Ukraine as well, with all the children being taken to Russia.
Mm. So there was a massive abduction of basically over a million Polish citizens, and they're sent to Siberia. What do they do in Siberia? We know it as a place of incarceration. What else is it?
Yes, I mean, there were the notorious prison camps there, but these were taken purely to be slaves, to be labourers, to basically chop down trees, or if you were really unlucky, you were sent to work in the gold mines, the absolutely notorious gold mines in Siberia, where people were working underground up to their knees in water, chopping away at the ore to get the gold out, and you usually didn't last more than 6 months there. It was a terrible time.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So they're basically operating as a slave labor force then in Siberia. Along comes 1941, though, just 2 years later, with Operation Barbarossa. This is the German invasion of Russia, and this happens initially very quickly. Suddenly, the Poles, therefore, are allies of Russia. So what happens to them in this situation?
That's right. It really puts Stalin on the spot because he needed Britain to be an ally, of course. And there was a Polish government in exile in Britain. So he had to, in a mealy-mouthed way, say, OK, the Poles are our allies now. I'll release all these people from the slave camps. A lot of them were POWs, including General Anders, and they can form an army and they can fight alongside the Russians against the Nazi invasion. Of course, it didn't quite work out like that.
Okay, well, explain. Well, let's get on to the Anders Army in a second. Some of the Poles ended up in Palestine, which was then a British mandate. How did that happen?
Well, there are a few reasons why this happened. The Poles were not entirely trusted by Stalin. He gave them a lot of very substandard equipment, which they weren't happy with. And we've all heard about their tactics in Ukraine, where they sent out really death squads to be mown down, and then the Russian soldiers would march over the bodies. And this is pretty much the plan that Stalin had. He'd just send the Poles out first, and Anders wasn't having this.
So tell me about Anders. Who's he? He's a Polish general.
He was a Polish general. He was captured by the Russians during the invasion by Germany and Russia. He was taken to the infamous Lubyanka prison and tortured because, hey, that's what they do, basically. And he was kept a prisoner there. And then he was probably the most authoritative leading figure that the Russians had in captivity. He had military experience, obviously, as a general. So they asked him to be the leader of this huge Polish army, which also had all the families as well, the camp followers who became part of this. He wouldn't leave without them.
Why did they do this? Why not just put the Poles under the command of Russian commanders?
I think they wouldn't. The Poles wouldn't have had it. Mm-hmm. They hated the Russians. And also, the Russian, you know, there was a language issue and the Russians just didn't want them, basically. They were a bit of an embarrassment. So the Polish army, the Anders army, was sent off to Tajikistan.
How big was
Uzbekistan?
How big was it?
Several hundred thousand.
Oh, okay.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of soldiers, yeah.
A lot of people to feed, a lot of people to move. So they were sent off to these remote Russian Soviet republics. Mm-hmm. You know, one minute they're in Poland at home, then the next year they're in Siberia, trudging through the snow. They form the Anders Army and they're trudging across deserts in Tajikistan. It's a long way from home. But eventually, Churchill and Stalin came to an agreement. Stalin didn't want them, didn't trust them. Churchill wanted them because he had a Polish corps in the British Army. So they were sent to Persia and then over the border into Palestine.
Heavens above.
Where they finally met up with, they were drafted into the British Army as a Polish corps. And they were picking oranges off the trees, and you know, it's extraordinary story. It was especially interesting.
This is a huge number of people, though. You're saying 200,000 Polish troops are suddenly in Palestine.
Yep, that 200,000 includes families as well.
Where were they all put up, as it were?
In army camps, in just all around the country. And they weren't the only immigrants arriving. And you have to remember, too, that around 20% of them were Jewish. They were not huge fans of the Polish officer corps, who were pretty anti-Semitic, a lot of them.
Yeah,
it was one of the problems for General Anders to keep his anti-Semitic officers in control. So when they got to Palestine, huge numbers of the Jewish troops in the Polish army deserted.
Okay.
They became absorbed into the local Jewish population.
Right.
And because of their military training, they were the beginnings of the Irgun, the Jewish independence army, which started fighting against the British for independence. And of course, that formed the core of the Israeli army when it came to independence.
What did the British think that they were doing? I mean, what did they want them to do in Palestine? Because there's not a lot of fighting going on there at this stage.
Well, it was a preparation. In Egypt and Palestine, there were worries about the Russians coming in and the Germans even coming in around the Mediterranean to the oil fields. So there was a defensive aspect to it. The other aspect was, although the troops didn't know at the time, they were being prepared for the invasion of Italy.
Oh, I see. Right.
So this, by now we're in 1942, 1943, and the troops in Egypt and the troops in Palestine were being trained to get up to scratch to invade Sicily.
Because by this stage, the Germans have been driven out of North Africa and so on. So
yes, that's right.
So does the Polish army participate in the Italian campaign?
Famously. There was a big battle it was a fiercely fought campaign. And there was a huge battle at an old monastery, Monte Cassino.
Oh, the Battle of Monte Cassino. Okay, yes. That involved a lot of Polish troops. Okay.
A lot of Polish troops were there. They were the heroes of Monte Cassino, including a Russian bear who was tamed by the Polish troops, taken with them all the way to Palestine and then on to Italy. They drafted him into the army, gave him a rank and a name and a number, and they trained him to hand shells to artillery soldiers. And he ended up going to Britain and living comfortably in Edinburgh Zoo, because lots of Poles ended up in Scotland.
Heavens
as well.
Above. Okay, so they were instrumental in the Italian campaign.
Very much so.
So what happens? Because the defeat of Italy occurs, of course, and then there's D-Day. What happens to the Poles then?
What happens then is what they regarded as a great betrayal. In fact. That as part of the dealings at Yalta, Churchill agreed that the communists could have Eastern Europe, including Poland. Mm. And so the Polish corps in the British army were persona non grata. They were not allowed to march in the victory parade in London in 1945. And this was a real slap in the face. A lot of them settled in Britain. But they couldn't go back to Poland. The Iron Curtain came down. They were distrusted by the communists as wicked Westerners who'd been corrupted. So they just had to scatter where they could through the world, Canada, South America, and obviously a lot came to Australia.
Okay. So themselves and their, well, in many cases, their families, as you say, were dissipated around Europe, but obviously not back to Poland. Many of them stayed, as you say, the Jewish people component stayed in Palestine, became the nascent defence force of the new Israeli state, and some of them, of course, came to Australia. That's how many came to Australia.
Do you know, I couldn't put a number on it, but I would say hundreds, if not thousands.
Right.
Because in my own circle of friends and friends of friends, there are a good half dozen. It was quite remarkable that after I'd written the story and done my research, I started asking around and people's eyebrows would go up. And they didn't have Polish names necessarily. And people would say, oh, yes, my mother was on that, you know.
Mm.
So it's really quite remarkable.
I'm talking with Paul Morgan, an Australian writer. He's author of a number of books, including the latest, The Winter Palace, about this story we're telling, which I think is probably not well known, as Paul suggests, about the fate of hundreds of thousands of Polish soldiers and civilians who were forcibly taken into Russia as slave labour, then reformed after the German invasion of Russia into a Polish army. A lot of them went to Palestine, and then they participated in the liberation of Italy, particularly at the Battle of Monte Cassino, which of course is a famous conflict in that war. When they came to Australia, how were they received here?
Well, of course, the late 1940s, a lot of people were arriving, and so you had the. On the one hand, there was a bit of resentment of, you know, refos, as they called refugees.
That's right. Hmm.
But also they were desperate, you know, as is always the case with immigrants. They were actually very welcome for the skills and the labour and the hard work that they brought. So, you know, coming in principally through Sydney and through Port Melbourne, they were put up in camps initially. And then huge numbers of them worked on the Snowy scheme. And anyone who had a skill or a trade would take that up here. And I think, as you probably know, with a lot of people who came after the war, they just put down their own Iron Curtain. They just did not want to talk about it.
Mm.
They just talked to their kids in English and it was like a new start. They were new Australians, and all the horrors of the war, they walled away behind
them. It was a very, very common experience, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was. And that's really what my book is about, that human experience that you can wall it away, but it doesn't disappear. There's a great quote from an American writer whose name escapes me, but he said, "The past isn't dead. In fact, the past isn't past. Mm. We're still living it," and that's so true.
Very much so. Very much so indeed. Well, good luck with the book, Paul. It's been terrific talking with you about it. About they're not corners of history. I mean, they were there under our nose, and for as you would know as a writer, some stories get written and others don't. And
that's right.
And the reasons why some stories get written and others don't is of itself sometimes more fascinating. Indeed. Paul Morgan's been our guest. He's an Australian writer and an author of this new book called The Winter Palace, about the Polish army, the Polish abduction. Paul, good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Good night.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.